like to talk and read all things books and mystery. Funny stories. The characters of youth always tend to be a sleuth. The hardy boys will do. Don't forget Nancy Drew. It's a clue.
Hello, sleuths. I'm Karen.
And I'm Kelly. Welcome to It's a Clue, a faux crime comedy podcast for 11-year-old poison artists.
Yay.
Today we are doing a Super Sleuth episode, and we will be discussing The Sweetness at the Bottom of the Pie by Alan Bradley, which is the first Flavia DeLuce book.
Yes, it is. And You know what? I won't say anything.
I know. Too many things to say. We'll wait. We'll go in
it.
The proper order. First, we got to ponder a thought. So here's the thought to ponder. This is a question that is posed to Flavia during her investigation. What is it that interests you above all else in the universe? And for reference, Flavia's answer is chemistry.
I think
the word interests is key. What interests you? Like it, you know, scratches your brain.
Like, honestly, I have this, and it's not a desire to be an expert in these things, but a very jack of all trades desire. I am very intrigued by the idea of, like, being the Renaissance woman. Like, I want to at least have a tertiary understanding of everything.
Way to narrow it down, Karen. What interests you above all else in the universe? And Karen's answer is everything.
That's what motivates me, is seeing something and thinking, oh, I'd like to at least understand how to do that. You know, like untangling skills that are critical and useful to day-to-day life. Like, I want to know how to make a dress if I need to. I want to know how to...
Yeah, like snake a drain.
I want to know how to grow a cabbage if I need to.
Okay.
And some of them are much more whimsical. Like, I want to make clothes for my dolls or whatever. But I love learning new skills. And even if I never do them again, and it's just a one-time thing, I've learned it. I understand. You know what? This is very Mr. Rogers. This is all coming from Mr. Rogers.
I get it. So you want to take a peek into the Crayola factory, and
yes,
then you want to take a peek into the doll head factory, and then you want to feed a goldfish. And
yep, that's exactly it. That's what interests me above all else, is just like glimpsing behind the curtain at how it all happens, you know, and maybe trying it. I want to make paper. I don't know.
So are you currently in the pursuit of some form of knowledge?
I am, and I'll tell you more about it in our "What have you been up to lately?" moments. But
fantastic. Yes. Huh. Love it.
Okay, giant question. Then back to you.
Oh yeah, I don't know.
What interests you above all else in the universe?
Okay, this is going to be another like very broad answer, but I think stories.
That's a really good answer.
Yeah, like I think that's like the common denominator in the things that I like the most. It's, you know, whether it's listening to somebody tell a story or tell me about, you know, just tell a good story about their life or whatever, or reading a book or going to the theater. Yeah, I think it's, you know, TV. I love TV. I love movies. Like, and it all just, I think, comes back to a story. So, yeah.
That was a really good answer.
Oh, thank you so much.
I wish I'd had more time to process mine. I sound unevolved.
No, I like yours. No, you're like, I'm a Renaissance woman. That's the most evolved thing you could possibly be.
I didn't say I am. I aspire to be.
Well, aspiration is like 8/10 of the game. I think somebody important said that.
The guy from The Office. What's his name? Michael Scott.
Michael Scott, Dwight Schrute, somebody like that. Yeah, somebody important.
Love it.
I said. Yeah. Do you want to fire up the PA? I'm sure we have some announcements.
Oh my gosh, I would love to. I actually have some very special announcements today, so I'm very glad that you asked me to be on PA duty.
Absolutely.
first of all, as we always say, let's make it a great day. Very different announcement than we've ever had before. I would like to specially dedicate this episode to someone slash a group of people.
Okay.
My coworker and friend, Nick, he and his family had a very beloved family cat, which was named Flavia Deleuze. And
oh,
Flavia is the main character of the book that we're discussing today. So to Nick, Diane, Maddie, and Piper, this episode is dedicated to you. Cat Flavia Deleuze went on to solve her next mystery in November of last year. And I just can't imagine how hard that was. And so, I don't know, maybe like hearing about Flavia's shenanigans in our weird Bisco sisters way will bring them some type of joy. So
yeah. Aww. Well, yes, dedicated to Nick and Co. and Cat Flavia for yes. sure.
Yeah. I also wanted to say a huge thank you to Paula N., who sent us a really beautiful note. Notes from the mailbag. Yes.
It was amazing.
She put so much wind in our sails. Thank you so much, Paula, for taking the time to write to us and for everything you said about, you know, what this has meant to you and why you've enjoyed it. I did want to share an article that Paula recommended. So she enjoyed our conversation about, you know, trying new things as adults. Like, that's come up a couple of times on the podcast, and being okay with being really bad at them for a while or potentially for forever. And she recommended an article. It's on longreads.com. It's by Devin Kelly, and it's called Stumbling Can Be Lovely. And I started Aww. Reading this today. I haven't finished it yet, but I'm really enjoying it so far, and it definitely is a concept that is near and dear to our hearts. So thank you so much, Paula, for the recommendation, and I hope you all enjoy it as well.
Yes, I can't wait to read that. And without further ado, I gotta say, it is our 3-year anniversary.
Oh my God. I kind of can't believe it.
I know. I can't believe it either. This is our 63rd episode, which on average is 21 episodes per year, which I think is pretty good.
How are you not sick of me yet?
I mean...
Oh, that was a long pause.
No, I just was trying... I'm like, I don't know. How do you prove a negative? Like, I don't know. I'm never going to be sick of you.
Oh, Kelly.
I'm certainly never going to be sick of you over this. This is like the easiest fun thing we've ever gotten to do together. So
that's true.
Yeah.
I just,
no, it's not, I mean, like, the thing that's going to split us up is like having to share a backseat again, you know.
She's touching me, Kelly.
Yeah,
Kelly ate my fruit snack.
If you cross the console line in a 4-hour drive in the backseat, I don't know that it can survive. But
she's taking all of the orange fruit snacks out of the fruit snack bag.
Well, listen, you got to be quick around me, okay?
I just, it's love so an orange funny gummy. To think back on this, because we started this during the height of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And we were missing each other and getting no stimulation outside of our isolated homes. And I don't know, it kind of started from a place of whimsy, and we're like, I don't know if anybody's going to listen to this or not. And
yep. And here we are, 63 episodes later, and still friends. Still talking about Nancy.
Yes. What is your favorite thing about the podcast?
Other than hanging out with you, I really like our rating metric system that adheres to no understandable metric. That is my favorite part.
I like
what
that.
Is your favorite part?
My favorite part is every episode when you do It Would Have Been Awesome If, because you are a very great mystery mind, and I 100% of the time feel like your suggestions are the book I want to read.
Oh, that's really nice of you to say. Thank you so much. Say more nice things about me now.
And you're pretty, and you're kidding. Nice, and you're smart.
Aww. I'm going to edit out the part where I solicited that feedback.
totally unprompted.
Thank you to everybody out there who has been listening, whether you've been listening since the beginning or you've just found our show, and, you know, everybody who's written to us and, you know, played one sentence plots and, you know, sent us in recommendations for, you know, super sleuth books, and just, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, there were for sure.
We literally would not do it without you.
For sure. There were for sure a couple of times where we were like, okay, maybe this has run its course.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, thought it was done. And then so many of you reached out to us and said, where are you? Are you coming back? Mm-hmm. And we did.
and
thanks to your support.
Yeah. So thank you. Well, Karen, I think we can turn off the PA system, and I would like to hear about what you've been up to.
Okay, so I've been obsessively crocheting, Kelly.
You have been?
Yeah, I was in like a knitting mode, and then I kind of knitted myself out, and I hadn't crocheted in a while, and so now I'm just crocheting all of the things. I have quite the yarn stash, and...
Fair.
Yeah, and I decided it was time to turn it into useful things.
That's great.
Yeah, so I'm making like pot holders and dishcloths, yeah. And I'm also making cute little amigurumi things. And I've long had this bucket list item of at least once having a table at a craft fair. Like, I just really
want to be that
girl. Yeah, and so I'm just gonna crochet all of my existing yarn into things that look cool together and are cute, and then maybe I'll have a craft booth here in Ypsilanti at the Freight House soon.
You should totally do that.
Thanks. I appreciate that vote of confidence. For some reason, I'm feeling a little like anxious about it, but I...
Oh, goodness. No, you're very talented, and your color choices are impeccable, and people would be thrilled to have the opportunity to buy your hand-crocheted wares.
Oh, the compliments are flowing today. I'm blushing. I know.
We must have started the wine and bourbon early. Sure. Or we just genuinely love each other. I don't know.
Well, could that's be that too. Also true. Both two things can be true at once. I have been having the craziest dreams lately. And I always have had my entire life very vivid dreams. And I remember them all when I wake up. But something in the last few weeks has shifted. I don't know, but my dreams have just been, from the second I close my eyes until the second I wake up, small movies all night long.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's just, and I'm not going to go into detail about the one I had last night because it was very triggering content that I doesn't need to be shared with the public. I will tell you about it later offline, but it was just like a very distressing dream. And I was able to, in the dream last night, I was so upset, and I had a moment where I took a deep breath and I said, this is so nonsensical that it must be a dream. And then I woke up. So
that's funny. Wow. Well, there's definitely something in the air. And if anybody knows the reason, please let us know. There's got to be a reason, right? If I dream, I never remember my dreams. You're I never so wake lucky. Up having a dream, ever. But the last 2 weeks, I've been having real crazy dreams. And I remember them. I know exactly what they feel like. I know exactly the content, like, which is very unusual for me. So,
interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like I'm sleeping with the windows open or something. You know, I don't know what it is. But
the eclipse is coming. The solar eclipse is coming.
Could be the eclipse, the pending eclipse.
Anyway, that's my scoop. So
yeah,
tell me of your world and your life.
I mean, I've been sewing a lot lately, so kind of same trajectory as you. Just I'm back on the sewing bandwagon.
I train, love it.
Cart. despite the fact that it's spring, I'm still constantly freezing, so that's cool. I went to one of your favorite places in Cincinnati over the weekend.
Well, there's not an American Girl doll store there, so I'm curious to know what it was.
A baby Karen favorite place. I went to see a comedian at Bogart's.
Oh my gosh.
And I have not been to Bogart's in a minute.
I haven't been there since I was a little baby goth. Oh my gosh.
A baby goth.
Meg Murph and I used to go to shows at Bogart's is still alive and well. Oh my gosh, tell me
Bogart's
everything.
Bogart's is alive and well. I went with a bunch of my friends, like-minded individuals, and Yeah, we had a really good time. It was super fun. The comedian's name is Joe Pera.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I did not make this up. He was described to me in this way, but he's basically a funny Mr. Rogers. He's great. Yeah. So anyway, that was super fun. And so I did want to share something that is not necessarily something I've been up to, but it's very relevant to what we're getting ready to talk about in some ways. And I am fascinated by this and literally want to go to England just to go to this location.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. Tell me everything.
So I don't know a ton about it, but I would encourage, if you're interested, like I would encourage anybody who's interested to just, you know, Google it. And there's pictures and stuff, but it's the Poison Garden at the Alnwick Garden, Alnwick. So from what I can tell, this is in the UK. The Alnwick Garden is like a big bunch of gardens that you can go tour through. One of the gardens is a locked, gated garden that is only accessible as part of a very small tour called the Poison Garden. It's like, it looks like something out of that Addams Family. Like, it's this huge, like, wrought iron black gate. And everything in there are poisonous plants. So I was reading somewhere that, like, people have passed out in this garden just from fumes.
What?
Yeah. They're very clear about, I'm sure, I don't know if you have to sign waivers or what, but yeah, like it's pretty intense. It looks very, very cool. You know, they tell you up front, do not touch anything. Do not lick anything. Try not to smell it. That would be good. Yeah, I want to go real bad. It looks very awesome.
I clicked on the link that you shared, and it looks so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It says it's home to around 100 species of dangerous, toxic, and harmful plants, each of which has the potential to severely injure you. Including, like, the opium poppy and belladonna. And monk's hood. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm into it, and Flavia for sure would.
This is the most Flavia thing ever. And also very up our alley. This is so cool. Oh, there's a BBC video about it linked on this page, and I can't wait to watch it.
I'm very excited. Have you been reading or watching anything cool that you would like to recommend to us?
Only
as we pull into the recommendation station.
Announce it.
Let's pull into the recommendation station. Woo woo.
Thank you. I refuse to make any recommendations without that introduction.
Fair. Understood.
Kelly, I have been watching Murder in New York on Netflix.
Uh-huh. It's great, isn't it?
Thank you for telling me about it. It is so good.
Yeah. I loved it.
It's so well made. The people are absolutely brilliant. It gives me a lot of confidence that if something nefarious happened to me, someone like that would figure it out.
Yeah. And so Murder in New York is a new Netflix doc, and it's produced by Dick Wolf. And he clearly was trying to make the documentary version of Law and Order.
Oh, so I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know that. I didn't know this aspect of it.
It's real life cases from New York City from like what, the 80s and 90s, and you know, it's interviewing the detectives and attorneys and medical examiners that worked on the cases, and it's really fascinating. And the craziest thing about watching those is, like, I mean, this was pre-cell phones, pre-internet, not pre-DNA, but like very early days of DNA. Like, really fascinating to think about how things have changed in such a short period of time. So
I totally agree. And one of the ones that I'd recently watched was really interesting because one of the examiners told the detectives, I can test this blood sample for you right now, but our technology right now will destroy that blood sample. And I am confident that if you wait, and he's like, I know this isn't ideal, but if you wait 5 years, we're going to have better technology that A, won't destroy the sample and will give you much better information.
Yeah.
They already knew that this person was not coming back, unfortunately. And so they chose to wait until the technology improved, and it did, and they were able to pinpoint it on a specific perpetrator with no doubt. And I'm like, that is incredible.
Yeah, it really is incredible. So,
yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
Slash, you know, quivering.
It's tough. And I have to watch an episode of The Bachelor to, like, in between to, like, balance it out. But
it's a different kind of nightmare. Yeah.
What do you recommend?
I just finished Yellowface by R.F. Kuang. And I absolutely loved it.
Dying to read. Tell me everything.
Yeah. The basic gist, I'll give you a little, this is the Goodreads synopsis. Athena Leo is a literary darling and June Hayward is a literal nobody. When Athena dies in a freak accident, June steals her unpublished manuscript and publishes it as her own under the ambiguous name Juniper Song. But as evidence threatens June's stolen success, she will discover exactly how far she will go to keep what she thinks she deserves. What happens next is entirely everyone else's fault.
Mm.
And it's all in first person from Juniper's perspective. So we've got a real unlikable, untrustworthy narrator. It's great. Couldn't put it down.
That sounds fantastic. I have a copy of it that is on my TBR. So thank you. I've bumped it to the top of the pile.
Yeah. And it's a very quick read. So anyway, enjoy.
I think quick read like for you. You're the fastest reader I've ever met in my life. Kelly will just like snarf a book down in 30 seconds. I've never seen anything like it.
I'm not that fast of a reader.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
I read it in a week. Okay. For context. So on that note, should we move into some Flavia?
Yes, I would love to introduce this book to...
Please do so.
Not to you. You've read it, but to our listeners.
Well, I didn't do any research on it, though. So I guarantee this will all be new information to me.
It doesn't involve Carolyn Keene, so... All right, so... The book we are talking about today is The Sweetness at the Bottom of the Pie. It was written by Alan Bradley, and it came out in 2009. We were young little bippers back then, right? I was fresh out of college. I must also laud the audiobook. It is narrated by Jane Entwistle, who is, bar none, the most fantastic audiobook narrator I have ever encountered.
Oh my goodness, that's high praise.
She is the perfect Flavia. She does such a good job of Flavia's little devious asides where she's like, well, absolutely, investigator. I hope it doesn't hurt him. Like, her ability to go through the different, like, registers of Flavia's, I'm performing for adults and I'm doing devious asides and I'm thinking really hard and I'm sad. Like, she is... amazing. And there are also a lot of characters in this book with different accents. The main bad guy that we will talk about is an English person who moved to America at some point, so he has this weird kind of hybrid accent, and she just nails it. Like,
that's so great.
Absolutely check out the audiobook for this. Good news, if you love this book, it's the first of 10.
Oh, I didn't know there were that many.
I thought there were 3 or 4. I did not realize there were 10.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
That's fantastic news.
We have so much Flavia left. Okay. I have 3 fun facts. This was Alan Bradley's first novel.
It gives me hope.
Likewise, I had the same reaction.
Yeah.
And... not only was it his first novel, he wrote it because he won in 2007. I must have said 2027, but that is not a timeline we are in. He won the Debut Dagger Award, which is an award the Crime Writers Association bestows. All you have to do, air quotes, is submit a 3,000-word entry point into the book and a 500 to 1,000-word synopsis. And based on that, there's a panel of judges that votes on it. And if your intro and synopsis are chosen, you get published, essentially. And he won it. His wife heard about this competition on the radio when Louise Penny won.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Alan, you're already working on this idea. You got to enter. And he did, and he won. Amazing.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. The other fun fact, well, the second fun fact, is that he had been working on this concept for a year or so, and it was a very different book. It was about a male detective.
No way.
And Flavia was a character that the detective encountered kind of like sitting in the driveway of a estate he was investigating.
Uh-huh.
And she was going to kind of be an informant and a character. And he said, I just kept writing this book and Flavia was the most interesting to me. And she just took the story over. And he said she jumped off the page and took over.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
I love hearing stories like that.
Me too. And so when he realized that he was spending all of his time interested in and thinking about and writing about Flavia, he started the book over and said, this is wow. Flavia's book.
That's so cool.
She came to be.
I get it. She's a great character.
Yep. And then final fun fact, in May of 2023, a movie announcement was made.
No, really?
Mm-hmm. And just wait.
Hold, please. Oh, my God. Continue. Go on. I did not know this.
I have been dying to tell you this. So Flavia is going to be played by a young woman named Isla. I'm not sure how to say her last name. It's either Guy or Guy. It's Isla, G-I-E is her last name. She's been in other shows and movies, but she most recently has been playing Matilda on the West End in London.
Oh my God, she's perfect.
Did you look her up?
Yes.
Yep. I'm like, this is exactly how I pictured Flavia.
Yes.
That also made me realize what a beautiful overlap there is between Flavia and Matilda.
There is, but Flavia is not the like little good girl that Matilda is.
Well, Matilda becomes very
precocious. It's true. You're right.
She puts the bleach in her dad's hat.
It's true.
She tortures her parents and the trunch.
The trunch.
She wrestles power back from the forces of bad. Anyway, I think they would be best friends, Matilda.
How often do you find yourself thinking about that chocolate cake? And why is it at least 6 times a week?
I don't think about the chocolate cake so much as I think about the chokey.
Oh, I think about the cake.
Oh, the other person that I saw that is confirmed to be in this movie is Martin Freeman, who you may know from Sherlock and The Hobbit.
I love Martin Freeman so much.
It has not been confirmed who he's going to play, but based on the other folks that have been cast, I don't think it's the dad. I think he's the inspector, and I think that he and Flavia are the two stars.
I hope that's true.
I believe that in my heart, Kelly.
I hope that's true. I love that idea. Yes. Because the dad is not a co-star.
No, I guess it could be Dogger as well.
He could be Dogger. But I like the idea of him being the detective that then they get to be like a reoccurring team.
Yes.
I hope that's true. Cannot wait.
Okay, this concludes my fun facts. And without further ado, we should give a super fast plot. And I need to do a disclaimer, Kelly.
Okay, disclaim away.
There was already a very great overview for this online. I didn't want to reinvent the wheel. This is on Wikipedia, so credit where credit is due. The reason that I did this is because this overview isn't super spoilery. So if you didn't fully finish the book, you haven't followed the clue paths, etc., this overview shouldn't ruin it for you. There is a very full overview on supersummary.com if you do want to have it ruined for you. This is not that. And I would like for you to read it, Kelly, if you don't mind.
Oh, Karen, nothing would give me greater joy.
Oh my God.
Shall we begin?
Yes, please. Let's shall.
Let's shall. As the novel opens, Flavia Sabina Deluce schemes revenge against her two older sisters, Ophelia, 17, and Daphne, 13, who have locked her inside a closet in Buckshaw, the family's country manor home located in the English village of Bishop's Lacey. Flavia has braces and pigtails like a typical 11-year-old, but she is also a brilliant amateur chemist with a specialty in poisons and a fully equipped personal laboratory on the top floor of her home. With her scientific notebook at the ready, she steals her oldest sister's lipstick, adds poison ivy extract, and then waits, eagerly anticipating changes in Ophelia's complexion. Flavia is especially jealous of her oldest sister because, at 17, she is the only one of the three girls with memories of their mother Harriet, a free spirit who disappeared on a mountaineering adventure in Tibet 10 years earlier and is presumed dead. Harriet's disappearance devastated their father, Colonel Haviland Jacko Deluce, a philatelist. Is that how you pronounce it?
The audiobook narrator was pronouncing it philatelist, and I...
Philatelist.
I'm not sure if that's a British pronunciation or...
A philatelist.
Philatelist. Huh. A stamp collector.
Great. A stamp collector and former amateur illusionist who spends most of his time poring over his stamps. The family shares their home with a local retainer, Arthur Wellesley Dogger, who once saved Colonel Deluce's life during the war and now works as Buckshaw's gardener, suffering frequent bouts of memory loss and hallucinations due to post-traumatic stress disorder from his time as a prisoner of war. Mysterious events begin to occur when Mrs. Mullet, Buckshaw's housekeeper and cook, discovers a dead jacksnipe, which is a bird, on the porch with a penny black stamp pierced through its beak. Then Flavia and Dogger overhear a heated argument between Colonel Deluce and a red-headed stranger, who later turns up dead in the family cucumber patch. When Colonel Deluce is arrested for the crime, Flavia takes her bicycle, Gladys, and begins an investigation in the village of Bishop's Lacey, interviewing suspects, gathering clues, and compiling research at the library, always staying ahead of Inspector Hewitt and the police department. As she single-handedly solves the crime, she uncovers the truth behind a 20-year-old apparent suicide at Colonel Deluce's alma mater, Grayminster. The suicide victim, housemaster and Latin scholar Grenville Twining, and the red-headed stranger in the cucumber patch, Horace Boney Bonapenny, both uttered valet as a last word. The trail connecting their deaths also includes political intrigue, rare Ulster Avenger stamps, sleight of hand, theft, blackmail, and murder. The end.
Oh, Kelly. Beautifully performed.
I'm sure I pronounced a lot of things incorrectly. Please forgive.
You did phenomenally.
Thank you so much.
The audiobook narrator would applaud you.
Aw, probably not, but thank you. Thank you for being kind. So, Karen, at this time, I would love to hear your GTNMs, aka your general thoughts and musings about Flavia and co.
Can do. I am in love.
I assumed. Yeah.
Hard stop.
Yeah. Next section.
Flavia is full of joy and enthusiasm. She's so curious about the world, and all of those things make her a perfect sleuth.
Yeah.
That being said, she's very charming and lovely, but she's also devious.
Oh, yeah. She's got sass for days, and I'm into it.
Yeah, she's a trickster, i.e. the poison ivy lipstick. I'm just like, oh, girl. But she's not actually as devious as she wants to believe she is.
Correct.
And it's adorable.
Yeah.
It reminded me, I know I've sent this to you probably more than once, but there's a meme of the cutest little baby bat, like a real life baby bat at a zoo, and someone's petting it on its belly and it's basically purring and putting its wing over its eye, and it says, "No, stop touching me. I am the knight."
that's very cute.
And that's Flavia to me, because she's adorable and everyone just mm-hmm. like loves her, and she's like, "No, I'm not cute. I'm bad."
Take me seriously.
she is, but she isn't.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect meme comparison.
What are your GTNMs?
I mean, I loved it. I love Flavia. This is like a classic British cozy mystery. Mm. just like, you know, a Miss Marple or like most Agatha Christie's, or, you know, pick a British cozy mystery. But usually it's an adult woman running around town peeking in windows. And in this book, we have all of the things you love from a cozy, but it's freaking little sassy Flavia, who everybody underestimates because she's a child, and she just proves them wrong again and again. And I loved her.
Oh, that's beautifully stated. I love how you said that. She does prove them wrong. They're like, she couldn't possibly. And she's
just a little girl. And she's like, hold my beer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can I park my bike here? You know what? I'm parking it here. So I think you should kick us off with a favorite part.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Should we just read the book out loud? Is that the easiest way to tackle this?
I love this book so much. It's so hard. Okay. I know what I want to start with. Because it's a shared interest. Flavia loves the library more than anything in the world. My favorite quote from the book is when she goes to the library and it is closed, because it's open 6 days a week. And she's yelling and kerfuffling, trying to get in the door and trying to knock on it and get someone to open the door. And she says, the library should be open 7 days a week. No, 8 days a week.
She's not wrong.
I loved that. I have never related to anything more. Also, her specific library, the one in her town of Bishop's Lacey, is very strange.
Mm-hmm.
So strange, in fact, that I had a bit of a hard time imagining it in my mental theater. But it's been abandoned and then reopened and abandoned. And at one point it was a car repair shop, and it has outbuildings. And one of the outbuildings has a pit that a car would drive in and sit on top of, so that the people underneath could change the oil in the car.
Yeah, so if I'm remembering correctly, I believe it's because there was this whole kind of, not a misunderstanding, but like the entire town was distracted one night because there was this like radio broadcast from the royal family or something.
Yes.
That they're all listening to, and therefore no one notices that the library is on fire. And when they finally realize that, they're able to get all the, or most of the books out, but they're not able to save the actual building. And so all of the books go into, I guess it's this auto garage or whatever, as just like a temporary location. But then World War One breaks out, and by the time the war is over, like, that is not the first piece of business at Bishop's Lacey. So the library has just kind of remained in this temporary location, and the pit area is where all of the, like, the stuff that now, oh god, I almost said the stuff that nowadays would be on microfiche, but no,
I was thinking about microfiche the whole time too. Yes. I'm so glad that you said that. I had microfiche on the brain 100%.
It's just like their newspaper archives and stuff, you know, but of course none of it's digitized in any way. It's just literally boxes full of like old newspapers and whatever. So, yeah.
Well, and then
very cool little library though.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I interrupted you. Say that again.
Just a very, very cool that, like, in spite of fires and wars, they still have a library. So,
well, my concluding thought on libraryness, which was just so charming to me and relatable, was that her ultimate battle for survival against Pemberton, the bad guy, takes place in this building where the newspapers are stored, and this pit for the cars is located, where she has found some of her most critical clues, and she has to do her ultimate act to solve all of this in the library outbuilding. And it just felt so right and appropriate. And of course she prevailed, because there are 9 more books, thank god. But loved that. Loved the library arc.
That's a really good point, that's where her big battle was fought. So
okay, what is your first favorite part?
I love how Flavia is so, she's just like, she's got this scamp in her. She's just a little scamp, and I love it.
Perfect word.
And And she has no, it's like she has no compunction about doing stuff. It's like she's like she doesn't have a verbal filter, but it's with her entire self. So like poisoning Ophelia's lipstick is one of the funniest things in the entire world, and it's not just funny, it's devious and it's smart. You know, like she has the ability as an 11-year-old child to take her older sister's lipstick, melt it down, mix it with essence of poison ivy that she has extracted, put like reset the whole thing and pass it off as if nothing has happened while she sits back and waits for her revenge to be wrought.
And she, the best part about it too, Kelly, is that like every morning at breakfast, she's taking these notes in her mind. She's like, day three, no noticeable change. Perhaps I've developed a cure instead.
Exactly. Exactly. She's like, you know what? I'm going to pretend like there's some real scientific method going on here, not just me trying to get back at my older sister for being a jerk. So she gets super mad, understandably, when the detectives show up to this homicide scene and are like, why don't you go make us some tea and wait in the kitchen? And she like basically stamps her little foot and is like, excuse me, I'm a detective. And they're like, you're 11. And she kind of hangs on to that diss for the next 150 pages.
She does.
She's mad.
She does. And she thinks it's because she's a woman, which I loved. Mm-hmm. And at first she has a very rational argument for that. She says, of course, it's because I'm a woman and women are only good for making tea. And I had a reaction to that. I'm like, yeah, that's terrible. Then I'm like, wait, no, this is because you're 11. You shouldn't be seeing 11. This at all.
Now, to be fair, if she had been an 11-year-old boy child, she probably would have been told to, like, go play, not to go make tea.
You make a
good
point.
She does have, Flavia makes a point, but so do you. She's waiting at the bus stop, and there's this really talkative dude waiting at the bus stop, too. And she wants to leave. But she feels like he's lonely, so she decides to stay and talk to him.
She does. That was very sweet to me. She's like, I guess I could like hide my bike and hide behind this bush, but he seems lonely.
I think
he's
somebody
like the sister's
to.
Piano teacher, and
yeah,
she's very sweet to him, even though in her mind she's fuming.
Yeah. Waste of time. My last one is she's very like, man, she can talk her way into something, and it's pretty impressive. Like, she does have a way with words, and she also very seasoned in bribery.
Mm-hmm.
So she wants to talk to the librarian because she knows there's some clues to be had there, but the librarian doesn't want to talk to her. So she decides she's going to go buy the librarian sweets from the sweet shop and use that as her like opening salvo for a conversation. But the sweet shop is closed because it's Sunday. So she all but breaks into the sweet shop owner's home. Like, she's peering into a second story window and like, excuse me, could you please come sell me some candy? And that leads to a whole like dialogue in which she convinces the sweet shop owner. She basically kind of trades gossip and intel for a favor, in which it's a, you know, she gets a sweet shop owner to sell her some acid drops, which I don't know what those are.
I meant to Google it and I didn't. And acid drops, candy. Oh, acid drops, candy.
Is it like a lemon drop?
It's like a lemon drop. Yep, that's the picture. A traditional sour boiled candy with a hint of lemon. It's a lemon drop.
Yum.
Yep.
Delicious. One of my favorites. Anyway, then she takes these acid drops over to the librarian, is like, you know, works her wiles there and is able to get intel with her little bag of candy. Very, very clever. Very clever.
And very effective.
Yes. Diabolical, in fact. Okay, your turn.
Okay. I would like to talk about the fact that I liked the sisterhood.
Mm-hmm.
One might revise our intro song to Three Sisters.
I don't think so.
Okay, so as you mentioned in the plot overview, we have Ophelia, who is pet name Feely, which is very funny because she's very in love with a guy named Ned, and she's playing piano and thinking about her romance and getting poisoned by a lipstick by Flavia. We have middle sister Daffy, whose real name is Daphne, who is, I would say, like the bookish one. She's kind of always just lost in. She's reading The Count of Monte Cristo. She's reading a lot of Dickens at the beginning, and she wants to be a writer. Very kind of academic in the way that she speaks, and a little lofty and very quiet, but always observing. There is definitely not a lot of goodwill between the three sisters.
No, ma'am.
They are three very separate units. Their paths do not overlap often, which makes sense because their dad is pretty isolated and clearly mourning the death of Harriet, their mother. They just don't really do anything together. And my favorite part of that aspect was that at the end, Feely and Daffy recognize that Flavia is missing again and that this has reached a dangerous point, and they rescue her by hijacking the mom's car and ramming it into the wall of this library outbuilding where Flavia would have been in a big pickle.
She was in a pickle for sure.
Yeah. So I'm going to say sisters.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, I'm going to say just I loved the cleverness of like the plot construction. So just like quick recap, there's this initial death threat. They figure out it's a death threat or a warning with the dead Jack Snipe with a penny black stamp.
Yes.
So it's so good because they figure out, Flavia figures out that the Jack Snipe is referencing her dad's nickname, which is Jacko. And that the penny black stamp has, like, it says along the bottom, there's a letter, one penny, and then a letter. And this specific one is B, one penny, H. So H, Bonapenny. So he's basically signed a warning that he's coming for Jacko.
Ugh.
Very clever. I love how we tie together these two mysteries, that something in the past has created a problem in the present. I love that we get the history of the two Ulster Avenger stamps. I thought that was fascinating and how it all ties back to, like, the Orange Men plot against the royal family, etc. Fascinating. I think, and I know we've talked about this with Nancy before, but we have everything we need to solve the puzzle at the same time as Flavia.
Yes.
So there's nothing that she knows that we don't know. There's nothing that, like, she figures out because she gets into a situation.
Yes.
You know? Like, she investigates and she picks up clues, but we're picking up the clues at the same time she is. So it's not like she gets kidnapped and that's how she figures out who the bad guy is. She's already figured out who the bad guy is. I love all of that.
I think that is such a tribute to the storytelling of this book, which is my last favorite thing. Like, there's just so much storytelling, which in Nancy, it's like a lot of, I don't know, just a lot of circumstantial things. And in this, we are taken on the journey.
Yeah, agreed.
Did you have anything in the category, which I mentioned earlier, it would have been awesome if?
I do. Ooh. I have one thing. So just a quick recap for this part in the book. And this, I don't want to go into too much of a synopsis, but like, The thing in the past that occurred that is causing the problem in the present is that Flavia's father, along with two school chums who are not good guys, basically, and Flavia's father is inadvertently part of this, they steal this priceless, very extremely rare, there's only two of them in existence, Ulster Avenger stamp from Dr. Kissing, who is like the headmaster of their boarding school. And it leads to tragedy, which now is leading to current tragedy. So ultimately in the book, Flavia finds the two stolen All-Star Avenger stamps, and she returns Dr. Kissing's to him. He is now very old. He's in like a nursing home, essentially. And he takes a stamp back and then burns it in this act of like, I guess, ultimate ownership. Like, it's mine and I can do what I want with it. And so my only idea is that we get an epilogue in which it's hinted that maybe Dr. Kissing doesn't really burn his All-Star Avenger.
Yeah.
That he has done this little magic trick, which is basically the same little magic trick with fire that the boys did to steal it in the first place. And in the epilogue, the librarian whose uncle was Dr. Twining, who ultimately is murdered as a result of this theft, receives a letter in the mail with the All-Star Avenger stamp in it.
Which,
you know, like, mirrors Flavia's returning the stamp to King George.
Beautiful.
I don't like the idea of the stamp getting destroyed. I want it to be passed on, but I like the idea that maybe nobody really knows he's done it. So,
I love that. Yes, I gasped when he burned it. I was like, after all this work.
I hated it. Yeah, how about you? Any would have been awesomes?
My only thing is that Flavia is very clearly teed up to be Harriet 2.0, so the mom.
Yes.
The what is the word? The mother who is no longer with us. You know, everyone's jealous of Ophelia because she is the only daughter who really remembers Harriet. And Daphne has one memory of Harriet, but Flavia has nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We understand from the author, though, that Flavia is the most like her mother. And mm-hmm. I wanted more insight into that, and I wanted that to be more of an aspect of this book. You know, how does she learn more about Harriet? How did that help her become who she is? And I'm just really hoping, and I would imagine that that's an aspect of the rest of the series, so I will be reading the rest of these.
Love it. So, Karen, I believe at this juncture, we normally talk about the Nancy Drew and Flavia Deluce Venn diagram.
That is exactly what we do. You are correct.
In a super sleuth situation, we Venn diagram it out. So how about you tell me, are there any similarities, aka any overlaps in the Venn diagram?
Yes, I will tell you my favorite similarities, and then would you like to do the deviations?
Oh, I'd love to.
Okay. I'm going to hustle through these. Mysterious out-of-the-picture mother.
Yep, check.
We have a slightly useless Ned in both series.
True.
So Ned Nickerson, obviously, and Nancy Drew. And this book, Ophelia, a.k.a. Feely, is in love with a boy named Ned, who seems like a two-timing dud to me. But
yeah, he's not great.
Yeah, TBD. Relationship with the local police.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy has Chief McGinnis, who mm-hmm. knows her name now. And if Nancy says jump, Chief McGinnis and his staff jump.
Mm-hmm.
Flavia very quickly earns the respect and trust from the main investigator on this.
Mm-hmm.
Higgins, is that his name?
Yes, it is Higgins.
He's very impressed by the information she has been able to glean.
Mm-hmm.
He respects her tactics, and I am excited because I have to imagine that this relationship is going to also evolve and be important in her future sleuthing.
Yeah. No, how can it not be?
Notoriety is an overlap.
Say more.
In a slightly different way. So everyone knows, like, Nancy is a famous sleuth.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows this about Flavia yet, but everyone knows Flavia.
True.
They know who she is. Her reputation precedes her. My favorite moment of this is when the piano teacher that you mentioned earlier encounters her and he says, oh, Flavia, you could never be a great pianist. And then he winks and he says, those fingers were made for creating poisons. And it is like the most seen and complimented she has ever felt.
Ever been.
Yep. I loved it.
And correctly so.
Yes. And then last but not least, I would say self-trained and self-motivated, Nancy and Flavia. Mm-hmm. They have learned everything they know because they put in the work. And they're, like, choosing where they spend their time. They're choosing to solve the mystery, which I feel like was very much the case with earlier Nancy Drew books. Maybe not so much as we're later in the series, but they see the question mark and they go for it, even though other people don't think a girl is the right person for the job.
Yeah. They have, you said it earlier, like, they have inquisitive minds.
Yes. An innate curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said.
Okay.
Flavia doesn't have a clue crew.
Mm-hmm.
She's ultimately kind of alone out there. She, you know, she finds out, it's, you know, at the end of the book that she's not totally alone. You know, to a degree, her family and Dogger have her back, but it's not the same. You know, she can't rely on them in the same way.
Yeah.
She can do her own chemistry, mm-hmm. meaning she doesn't need a Ned.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, she is, I need her to get a clue crew, though. I need that to happen because she has no one to leave a note for. You know, it's, she's breaking our rule 101.
That stressed me out because she kept returning home from her adventures and her family was bereft. Even her sisters that she didn't get along with were like, we have been crying all day because you vanished. And I'm like,
I don't, you got to tell somebody where you're going to be. Yeah, it's not great. That's how you wind up in a car pit with a killer, you know? She obviously is able to navigate and get to a much smaller footprint than Nancy does because Flavia is bound to two wheels.
AKA, she can't drive a vehicle.
Correct. We have to sleuth in a bikeable circumference. It's definitely, you know, an earlier time period and cozier. So we don't have any river submarines. We don't have helicopters. We don't have, you know, NASA space shuttle threats. We don't have laser beams pointing at the moon. We have stamp collectors and libraries and attic laboratories.
I love it, honestly.
And I will stand by that pronunciation until the bitter end.
Dexter's Laboratory. I love it.
Correct. That being said, even though, you know, we're in like a little bit, we're in this cozier landscape, you know, where everything's a little bit sweet, the stakes are way higher than they are in Nancy. Like, we have a dead dude in a cucumber patch, which I don't believe has occurred in Nancy Drew.
It has not. You are correct.
We have an 11-year-old child who's been kidnapped and thrown into a car pit.
I thought this book was really scary, honestly. It's
very scary. Very scary. So yeah, stakes are pretty high. Like, Flavio was in real big danger. And not like real big danger of like, you know, I'll never forget Nancy Drew in the Old Clock, where it's like she gets thrown into a closet and instantly she's like, I'm going to suffocate in this closet. And I'm like,
she's starving. Wah. She's instantly starving.
Yeah. I'm like, you just got there. Flavia has a hypodermic needle of poison piercing her spinal column. Oof. So things are different.
Yeah. There's never once been a moment where I'm like, I think Nancy is legitimately going to die. Not once.
The closest I've come was the plane situation in the last book.
The Alaska Airlines moment.
Mm-hmm. 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 I thought she was going out. I thought she was going out for sure. Also, okay. I would like to have a conversation about this because tell me if you agree with this or not. And I'm disagreeing is perfectly acceptable. Nancy is investigating crimes. So a bad thing has happened and she's out trying to correct the bad thing that has happened. Like 9 times out of 10. Somebody stole something or something's gone missing or, you know, someone's disappeared. However, Flavia is investigating a mystery. Mysteries, plural. So I guess by that, she's getting a lot more into the why something happened as opposed to the how something happened and the what happened. Like, does that make any sense at all? Am I completely incorrect in that?
I absolutely see what you're getting at. Nancy's is more of a, Nancy knows what end she's trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And Flavia doesn't know what the ultimate result is, mm-hmm. but she does know that she has to, she can't live with the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
I do see what you're saying. Absolutely.
Like, if this were Nancy Drew book, Nancy would be trying to find out who killed the man in the cucumber patch. Flavia is trying to find out who killed the man in the cucumber patch and why.
And why her and, dad was upset.
Yeah. And the only way she finds out who is by exploring the why. Nancy would just, like, hunt down a clue and be like, well, you know, there was a tuft of blonde hair, so I'm going to go interview all of the blonde-haired people in the village. And yes. then I'm going to narrow them down. You know what I'm saying? Like,
and there was a footprint and, yep.
Right. Right.
Beautiful. That's, I, yes, I, you beautifully
it's,
illustrated
it's
that.
Like a bigger concept that I have not fully fleshed out because this is a short podcast, but like I feel like there's something there.
There's a dissertation here, Kelly, and I
there is. I'm
will
not into it.
Defend your PhD for you. I love it.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So that concludes my thoughts. Do you have any open questions that you would care to share with the class?
I have but one.
But one.
But space one. Inspector Hewitt,
mm-hmm.
at the very end of the book, Flavia is watching him take notes down in his notebook, and she jokingly references the fact that she's very good at reading upside down because she likes spying on what Ophelia writes in her diary. Relatable younger sister content.
And highly.
She notices that he writes things in symbols. He has symbols for names and certain words that he uses frequently. It's his inspector shorthand. And she asks him, what symbol do you use for me? I have to be in your notes a lot. What's my symbol? And he says, he tells her he uses the symbol P.
Hmm.
And
yep.
we never know why. What do you think the P stands for?
I don't know.
I think it's pie.
So she's the sweetness at the bottom of the pie?
That's my theory. But then I also, because she's a chemist and he knows that about her and likes it about her, so P is the chemical symbol for phosphorus. And so I was looking up elements of phosphorus, and I wasn't seeing a strong correlation that I would defend.
Is phosphorus, that's very flammable though, right?
And it's like a thing of life and like vivacity mm-hmm. and stuff. But there could be something there. But I think that Flavia might be the sweetness at the bottom of the pie that is referenced by the title and the quote at the beginning of the book. I don't know though.
Interesting. Well, maybe it will become clear in future books.
I need it to, because this is, of all the open questions I've had, this is the one that like truly keeps me up a little bit at night.
The one I have is this. Do you think Harriet's still alive?
Kelly!
And with that, let's move on to our ratings.
I had not even considered such a thing. Kelly! Oh my God, I wish you could see my...
I think she might be.
I wish you could see my face right now. Oh, I hope so. I hope so. That would be... Oh.
I wonder.
This is the most mind-blown I've ever been on this podcast.
And roll end credits.
All right. All right. Okay. I am freaking out. This week we are rating the sweetness at the bottom of the pie out of a 12 possible poisonous lipsticks. Kelly, what Perfect. Do you rate this book?
11 and a half out of 12 poisonous lipsticks.
Holy moly. Defend.
I loved it. I loved it. I deducted half a poisonous lipstick because I didn't like that the rare stamp got burned for no reason.
Yep.
And I'm really not into how mean Flavia's sisters are to her. I think they're like borderline cruel.
Agreed.
But ultimately, I love it. Flavia is a great character. Love. How about you?
11 out of 12 poisonous lipsticks. Yeah, same. I Amazing. Loved it.
Yeah. What was the deduction for?
Well, I'm obsessed with Flavia. I'm absolutely going to read the rest of these without question. The reason I removed one is because of Harriet. Like, I just want more Harriet and a little more sister teamwork, which you mentioned. And now that you have teased me with the fact that maybe
it's not Harriet, a tease. It's just a question. I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't read any more of these. I have no insider information, so... That's not true. I've read the next one, but she doesn't come back in that one either.
Wait,
so.
What?
I've read the second one of these.
Had you already read this book before the podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Revelations here in the 11th hour.
Yeah. I read this one and the second one, I don't know, probably a year or so ago.
Did you reread it?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, you are... dedicated, and I didn't know this.
I did a heavy skim. but because I remembered it, you know. So
moving into our last moments together today.
Oh.
What would you like to read next with me, your sister Karen?
With my sister Karen, I would like to read next Nancy Drew, The Spider Sapphire Mystery.
Okay.
Which I should be the next one in the series. But yes, that is what I would like to do.
I have a bookmark on my Chrome browser that is Nancy Drew Books in Order, and I check it constantly.
Same. I believe we're going to be taking a small break. Is that correct?
Yes, we will be starting to approach our spring break moment, which we will take, you know, probably one session off to rejuve. Honestly, I keep thinking it's like springtime, and then it snowed 4 inches the other day.
Yep, don't like that.
There's also like a standard tornado happening outside my window right now, so hopefully you'll hear from me again.
Oh, goodness, don't say that.
Well, if you enjoy this as my last wish as this tornado takes my power out, please rate, review, and subscribe. Tell a friend. And most importantly, you can find us on Instagram at It's a Clue Podcast.
And if you would like to, please consider joining us on Patreon as a Helen Corning friend. We'll give you a shout out. You'll get some bonus content for season 3 and beyond. And you'll get to vote to select Super Sleuth titles like today's title. Yeah.
And Kelly, please never, ever forget what we learned today in the sweetness at the bottom of the pie.
What did we learn?
If someone is tying your hands behind your back, tent your fingers to create some extra wiggle room so you can escape. Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't work, kick them in the Casanovas.
Excellent advice. And with that,
happy sleuthing!
It's a Clue is hosted by Kelly Biscopink and Karen Farmer. Our logo is designed by Courtney Kyle. You can find her on social media at I Am Courtney Kyle. The It's a Clue theme song was written and recorded by Danny W. You can find her on Facebook at Danny W Music. Audio engineering is graciously done by our friend Mark Goodlow.